In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
The far left and deep state literally can't help themselves. They hate Trump because he is a threat to them and to their multi-trillion dollar taxpayer-funded wishing well. And so it is no surprise that they immediately wished that the shooter had not missed. And when normal people were so repulsed at that, that they then tried to pivot to, well, it was a staged pretend assassination. And when people then pointed out the obvious stupidity of that one, that no one stages an event in which one person is killed and two others wounded with live fire, they are now going with, he wasn't really hit by a bullet. Why? They depend on people hating Trump. And someone you're supposed to hate, you simply cannot allow that they may have done something heroic. Like take a bullet to the ear, a couple millimeters away from being dead, then shake off that danger, stand up, and raise a defiant fist in the air. No fear, no backing down. People like and admire heroes. That's why they are so desperate to change the narrative. It's why they immediately started calling Joe Biden a hero after he resigned. It was heroic and selfless. Nice try, but it's a silly comparison. But they need you to hate Trump. When you hate someone, you don't listen to what they say. You just assume their policies are as bad as they are, without ever even bothering to look at them, or for that matter, looking back at your own memory and remembering how good things were, yes, even if you hated the man. So many people are still determined to hate him that they believe that Trump colluded with Russia to steal the election from Hillary, even though that has been proven false. They believe that he's a rapist, a tax cheat, that he's a Nazi, that he's the next Hitler, that he wants to be a dictator, that he's a threat to the nation or a threat to democracy. Pick whatever you like, but those lies are designed to inspire hate. And that's important because when you hate someone, you stop seeing them as a fellow human being. These are the battles that we're going to be facing in the months ahead. And to get through them, you need to know who you are, what you believe, and why you believe it. Have you ever really thought about why do you vote the way that you do? Maybe it's the Second Amendment, lower taxes, better economy, so on and so forth, but underneath all of that is your belief system, not just in the rights and liberties you support, but deeper down is the religion or philosophy that inform and that are the foundation of those rights and liberties. And yet, for an awful lot of people, those morals and belief systems somehow disappear when it comes down to voting. Like what you see sometimes in California, where there are a lot of people who call themselves Christians, and sad to say, this is especially true of Catholics there, who vote for Democrats despite those Democrats' advocacy of the most extreme abortion bills, even up to the moment of birth and even beyond it. And if you're thinking it can't possibly be true that any politician would vote for infanticide, look up California Assembly Bill 2223, which would allow killing babies after they're born up to a week or more afterwards. Politicians think up such things because they weren't yanked out of office the last time they thought up such things. To talk about what is happening on the moral battlefield here in America, I'd like to welcome Bill Donahue. He is an author and media personality. He is the author of thousands of articles and 10 books. His books focus on ethics and religion and the war with secularism and its attack on America's foundation and its future. Bill, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Mark.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've said many times on this show that to turn America around, America really needs a revival, a spiritual one, because ever since its founding, America has been in a spiritual war. A war between good and evil. Is there any other way to look at this, especially what is going on right now?
No, because quite frankly, while we do have a political crisis going on, and we could say we have an economic crisis as well, it all comes back with the culture. It starts there. Our society is atomized. We have radical individualism, people out for themselves. The common good doesn't count. You can see that in politics. You can see it in the economy. But it all comes from the culture. Hmm. So unless we understand what goes on in the culture, we're not going to understand anything else. And quite frankly, what we see in our society today are two competing and irreconcilable views,
yes,
visions of man and society. On the one hand, we have the religious perspective, grounded in our Judeo-Christian background, which says we believe in God, we believe in truth, we believe in human nature, we believe that human perfectibility is not possible here on earth, only in heaven, and there are moral absolutes. And contrast that with the secular vision. God doesn't exist. We're smarter than God. There's no such thing as human nature. There's no such thing as not having a society where we can have perfection here. Yes, we can have perfection. We can have utopia here on earth. Truth is a fiction. And moral relativism is the way to go, not moral absolutes. One side eventually will triumph over the other. Right now, it's been brewing for some time, for decades actually, and how it flushes out has yet to be determined.
Yes. So when it comes to secularism, which is a philosophy devoid of God and the notion of an ultimate lawgiver, what are the moral breaks in that philosophy, if any? I mean, and are they really breaks on behaviors or just temporary ones until society changes to the point that it allows tomorrow what is reprehensible today?
I'm glad you asked that question because you put it in a very apt frame. And the answer is there are no breaks. There are no limits. And that is, in fact, the problem with secularism on top of everything else. I mean, there's every vision has to have some limiting principles. Every ideology that's worth anything has limiting principles. But once you accept the idea, just take one example, that truth is a fiction. Once you accept that, there are no limits. There are no breaks. Now everything is possible. And in fact, in my book, Cultural Meltdown, I mention an exchange between David Detmeyer, who's a philosopher who has his head screwed on straight, and another person, Laurie Calhoun. She's a postmodernist. Now, for the listeners, a postmodernist simply means there's no such thing as truth. They don't believe in truth. So he had to ask her, and this is a true question he asked her, are giraffes taller than ants? And her reply was no. She said that's a matter of religious faith.
Oh, wow.
Now, you see, that's a perfect example of what you were talking about, no breaks, no nothing. But you see, once you believe this, then yes, a man can think he's a woman can think he's a man. You know, we're seeing things that came out by Newsweek magazine and said that Trump was not shot. It just came out.
Yes.
All right, this week. Yep. It came out that Trump is not shot. So you can believe anything. You know, children on Halloween, they dress up as pirates and monsters and witches and whatnot. And that's all good fun for little kids. But when you have adults in senior positions and elite positions in our society who argue that you can change your sex as quickly as you can light a match, then we are really seriously in trouble.
Well, so if in a secular worldview that effectively allows anything, then why is Christianity such a threat? I mean, shouldn't inclusivity include Christianity?
Well, that's where they do have some breaks. When it comes to Christianity, no. In order for them to really have a society without breaks, you have to destroy us. It always comes down to us. It always comes down to us. To get rid of our Western heritage, and I say, okay, fine. Let's get rid of our Western heritage. Let's have multiculturalism. I say, so what do you want now? What are you going to recommend? Do you have a model in history that's worked out?
Yeah.
Let's try the French Revolution. Let's try Stalin. Let's try Hitler. Let's try Mao.
Sure.
Let's try Pol Pot. What do you recommend? Do you like it? What's going on in the Middle East?
Yeah.
With women? Do you like that?
Well, actually, you bring up the Middle East, and that's where I was going next was, you know, the secular worldview really hates Western civilization and philosophy. Why does it not hate, say, the Muslim worldview, which, given a chance, would kill seculars because their worldview would be seen as blasphemous? And yet you never hear them criticize some of the Eastern religions.
Well, and I have an answer for that because I've written about this in the past, but it's a good question because I remember I had to give it some thought to myself. I said, what does the left, the radical left in this country, have in common with the radical Islamist? I'm not talking about your average Muslim. I'm talking about your radical Islamist. The one thing they have that binds them together is hatred of the West, the hatred of America, hatred of Israel, hatred of Europe, okay? Now, the people on the left are willing to say, we're queers for Palestine. We'll be on the side of Hamas, even though Hamas will kill you if they find out that you're a homosexual. They will kill you. But they're willing to take that chance now because they have a joint interest in tearing down Western civilization based on the Judeo-Christian heritage.
Mm.
And once that happens, I guess they're just playing a roll of the dice. They hope that the Muslims won't behead them.
Yeah.
It's just that insane, Mark.
Yeah, it is. It sounds like they've adopted the theory of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So, okay,
right.
It is time for a break. We are talking about the moral battlefield going on right now in America. We'll continue that discussion with Bill Donahue after this. And welcome back. We're talking today to Bill Donahue. He is the author of 10 books focusing on ethics and religion and their ongoing battle with secularism and its attack on America and our way of life. His most recent book is Cultural Meltdown, The Secular Roots of Our Moral Crisis. It was just released in June of 2024, and we're talking to him today about the ethical and moral war happening in America. And, you know, I'd like to talk to you about one example that is right out there in broad daylight of moral decline, and that's the attempted assassination of President Trump. And not just the shooting itself, per se, because we're obviously, you know, we've obviously had assassinations and attempted assassinations of presidents in the past. But really, instead, I'd like to talk to you about what led up to that shooting, because I think it's really an example of what's happening in America. And oddly enough, his parents were mental health counselors. So perhaps it's a bit surprising that he turned to that. But at the same time, you know, I know a lot of pastors' kids and missionaries' kids that can and do turn out rather badly despite good parenting. So do you think we know enough yet, or have you seen anything in particular about that shooting that would explain his motives?
No, as a matter of fact, as I've written about this, and I think we're looking in the wrong place.
Hmm.
I think people are missing the fact. It's not the politics of the kid that matters. He gave to left-wing causes, and he was a registered Republican. I have studied, I have a doctorate in sociology, and I've taught criminology, and I've written on this subject for decades. I've studied mass shooters. They have some things in common. It's not politics. It's the fact that every single one of them are loners who have no friends, who are quiet, shy, diffident, and they come from dysfunctional families. We don't know what this family really was like.
Sure.
There's not a word has been said about his religious upbringing, because typically they do not have any. But what I'm saying is that you've got people who are fascinated with violence and the like. They're looking for attention. Let me just say this, because a sociologist, every person who's ever walked the face of this earth, a universal statement, no matter what age, are looking for two things in life: affection and recognition. Just take recognition. If you're a loner, you get recognized for nothing. Remember that Las Vegas shooter just blew everybody away. Nobody could figure out what he was doing. This is a high. This is a rush. This is their moment. This is spectacular. We can't understand it because we're normal, but these people are not. They've never got an ounce of recognition in their whole life. They may also have some mental issues. I'm not saying they're totally crazy, but they've got some real issues. The fact that you have no friends would be some kind of a red flag. It should be to somebody on this. But yeah, I mean, that has something to do. We're creating a society where people are atomized. In other words, it's hard to form bonds. The most natural thing in the world is to bond with your family and friends. But if you can't get really strong bonds, and, you know, quite frankly, the parents may have been actually social workers. I have met enough of these people to know that they're always concerned about people who don't live in their own house more than they are the people who live with them.
Hmm.
So there's more to come out on that. But I do think that, and look at what's going on, even with the Secret Service. We have a society of comfortableness. They're very relaxed. Standards are lax. They're lax on the ball field. They're lax at work. We have defund the police. Nobody has any consequences. You can take over the Capitol, burn the American flag, put up that Palestinian flag. There are no consequences. I live in New York City. You can throw people into the subway and you'll be left out the next day. When you have a society where nobody's accountable, then you have a situation where a lot of Secret Service people, why do they care? If they're going to get their same paycheck no matter what, unless there are consequences for incompetence and for slackers, you're going to have more of these problems. And I think it's a cultural thing more than even just an individual one.
Oh, and I totally agree with that. I think so much of the culture right now is that it's perfectly fine to hate people, and you do that by dehumanizing them. I mean, all of the criticism of Trump, the lies about him that he was, I mean, for heaven's sakes, Hillary Clinton launched the whole Russia collusion thing, and that, you know, Trump was colluding with our enemies to steal the elections. They believe that he's a Nazi. They believe that he's a threat to democracy, which is just laughable coming from the Democrats. That just appointed somebody, you know, democracy be damned. But, you know, I've talked to a lot of people who hate Trump, and the most common denominator among them is that they have fallen victim to believing the lies about Trump. I mean, how much do you think those lies and the hate that they then inspired led up to that attempted assassination, or do you think he had other reasons beyond that?
Well, it does create a milieu or an environment, a climate, a social climate, where it allows people who have some kind of an aggravated situation in themselves, they suffer from some aberrant condition, it does give them a pass. They do think that they now have a green light, and that in itself is a serious problem. I hope we can get to the bottom of this and find out more about what's been going on. But the idea that Trump is this great threat, look, I met a lot of people who don't like Trump, and admittedly, the man can drive you crazy, he insults people, he can be obnoxious, he can be a narcissist, I get it. But, and I say to people, are we children? Aren't we asking who's the best person to govern? Do you like his policies on the economy better than Biden's? Do you like his policies on the border better than Biden's? Why is it that when Obama was president, Putin went into Crimea in Eastern Europe? Why is it that when Biden is president, Putin went into Ukraine? Why is it when Trump was president, Putin sat still? Now, if you like the policies of Trump better than that of Biden, and by the way, he's obnoxious in his own right, I said, what are we, children? Why are you allowing your concern about you don't like his persona? Shouldn't an adult make decisions on a person's in public office on his policies, not his persona? So that's a kind of a juvenile response, which I see all the time.
Yeah, well, I look at it in a similar light, which is that I would much rather have an effective boss that is able to run the company really well, that I personally dislike and can't get along with, versus a boss I really love, and yet he runs the company into the ground, and suddenly I don't have a job. I mean, that's, you know, you're right. We've got to put personalities behind things. You know, actually, let me save this for the next segment. We're getting close here, and I know it's going to take you a bit to answer this. So everyone stay with us. We're going to have more with Bill Donahue. We're talking about the moral battleground here in America. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking about the moral battlefield going on here in America. We're talking with Bill Donahue. He's an author and media personality. He has 10 books out there, and his most recent book is Cultural Meltdown, The Secular Roots of Our Moral Crisis. Just came out last month there. And Bill, I wanted to continue just a little bit there. I'm talking about this assassination, attempted assassination of President Trump. And, you know, when talking with people who cling to those lies about Trump, and those lies really help you hate somebody, but it really seems that a lot of them cling to those lies. And I'm often reminded of that old saying attributed to Mark Twain, it's easier to fool a man than to convince him that he's been fooled. So how do you help people get past those lies and to see that they really were lied to?
It's very difficult today because so many people live in an intellectual ghetto. I have a friend of mine, and he is a friend, and I've been telling him for the last couple of years that Biden is mentally shot. And he says, that's not true. Oh, now, wow. He watches religiously and exclusively MSNBC. He never once saw any footage of Biden losing his marbles. Now, he had to watch it on the same day the rest of the country watched it a couple of weeks ago on a Thursday, and we had the debate. And after that, he was shaken, and he admitted that I was right. I said, but don't you understand you've been held hostage, that you're in a mental prison when you don't look for anything but one left-wing source? Now, that did help crack things a little bit there, but there are so many people who are impervious to reason. Okay, we can't reach them. However, there's a big middle ground. Remember, most people in this country are not Republicans or Democrats. The plurality of the people in this country are now independents. They don't trust the Republicans. They don't trust the Democrats, although they lean more Republican than they do Democrat. We have to always remember we got basically three segments of the population, the ones who are with us, the ones who are against us, and the big middle who can be swayed. So what you've got to do then is to try to persuade, give a book to somebody, give an article, talk it up with them. Don't have to browbeat them, but it could be in family and friends. I'm talking about the ones who are reasonable and who are open-minded. If they've already shut their mind, well then, quite frankly, you probably can't do anything much with them.
Your friend there, that admitted that you were right about the mental issues there with Biden. Did he then make that next step and say, and you know, what else have I been lied to about?
He's beginning to question a little bit. All right, he hasn't made the turn that I think he really should have made even by now, but he is beginning to question a few things now. He's a little bit less cocksure. And that debate did do that for millions of Americans who have been held hostage, and they couldn't deny it any further. But when I read, as I do from Newsweek magazine, that Donald Trump may never have been shot at all.
Yeah.
That was the headline
yeah.
of the piece that came out on Thursday of this week. So you've got to understand that, you know, there are people who are gaslighting. They're making you think that you're crazy by lying to you and getting you to believe their lies. That's what gaslighting is. And they're hoping that you won't check on anything. I think it's a little bit overdone at this point. Everybody who criticizes Kamala Harris is now either a racist or a sexist or both.
Yeah.
I mean, it is just stunning the way they try to shut down debate. It's all a matter of thought control. That's what it is. And that is one of the central problems of this country today. This is Orwellian kind of thought control.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And as far as him not being shot, I'd like to know what shrapnel apparently hit him when nothing's been shattered. So, yeah, maybe it was just a supersonic bird that flew too close just at the same time that those shots were fired. So maybe that's what it was. But your new book, Cultural Meltdown, in the write-up on your book, it says that you talk about the connection between freedom and truth and the secret to their restoration. Without giving away too much, because we'd obviously like people to order your book, can you give us a taste of what that secret is?
Well, quite frankly, we have the answer. It's in the Decalogue. It is the Ten Commandments. It is the teachings of the Catholic Church. We know what the prescription for the right order is. The Catholic Church's teachings mirror and support and complement human nature with all of our strengths and weaknesses. What we're seeing with the secularists is, because they reject human nature, they think that we're malleable like a piece of putty. They can twist us and turn us. And quite frankly, you know, we have to keep the bar high. People say, well, the Catholic Church is too strict and I want to be free. Okay, I have a chapter called libertinism, which basically means a sexual free-for-all. There's no boundaries, no breaks whatsoever. How happy are these people? Many of them are physically dead, not just simply spiritually dead. They've ruined themselves. And in fact, in a previous book, Mark, in a book called Catholic Advantage, I compared and studied cloistered nuns, and I compared them to Hollywood celebrities. Guess who has the big mental health issues? Guess who lives the longest? It's the nuns who live the longest. Hmm. It's the Hollywood celebrities who are miserable, who are unhappy people. There, so many of them have been involved in drugs and alcohol abuse and whatnot. Well, if they're so free, why do they have all these diseases? Why is it that so many people who have thought that the idea of this, let's just take sexual boundaries and throw them off the roof, that leads to the morgue in more ways than one. So the Catholic Church is basically saying that if you want to be free, you have to, first of all, know right from wrong. You can't be free unless you develop your own resources, your own potential. You can't develop your own potential unless you practice self-discipline. You can't have self-discipline in a society where there are no boundaries, no bonds, no breaks whatsoever. So yes, by exercising restraint, that will set you free, and you won't be dying prematurely.
We've only got about a minute here with you. Can you look down the road and compare the moral landscape of an America under a Kamala Harris administration versus a President Trump?
It's scary. I mean, Kamala Harris's views are even to the left of Biden. There was a poll that came out, a Gov poll, here a couple of years ago. And in 2019, when she was a sitting U.S. senator from California, she was voted the most left-wing extreme senator in the United States, beyond Elizabeth Warren, beyond the self-proclaimed socialist Bernie Sanders. And by the way, get this, listeners, that poll that I just mentioned, it's been taken down. I have the results of it, and so do others. They take it down. They're scrubbing the internet free of anything that could be negative her. Videos have been taken down. This is another example of the thought control which the ruling class is trying to pull off.
Mm. Well, unfortunately, we're up against the clock here with you. I would love to continue this conversation again sometime in the near future. Bill Donahue, author of Cultural Meltdown, The Secular Roots of Our Moral Crisis. Bill, thanks for joining us today. This has been great.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you. And keep up the good work, buddy.
Thank you. And welcome back. If you're just joining us, we just wrapped up with talking to Bill Donahue about the ongoing moral battle here in America. But America isn't the only one needing saving. Here in Oregon, certainly we do too. And one big step in the right direction would be to get a moral and ethical person into the office of Secretary of State, one who does not take side gigs with a business that they are supposed to be overseeing and auditing, such as what happened with our previous Secretary of State, who had to step down because of that scandal. I'd like to welcome now Dennis Lithicum. He is running for Secretary of State as a Republican candidate. Welcome back. It's great to have you.
You bet. Thank you for having me. It's good to be back. Last time we almost didn't end in the allotted time, and we could have kept going. Yes, so we'll see how we do today.
Yeah, that's always a challenge sometimes. So, like I mentioned there, does Oregon need some help here on the moral battlefield, or are we on a right and just moral path here?
I think that there are several facets to that. One, there's the absolute problem that Oregon, refuses to recognize, and I think it's purposeful. It's a purposeful refusal, is the idea that you cannot coerce your way to liberty. You can't tell your children, I'm going to beat you with a stick and have them do all the right things, like do clean the kitchen table and put the silverware away and whatever, because as they're doing that, they'll accidentally drop the china or whatever. And then everybody's mad, and the whole thing happens. Training your children requires giving them responsibility.
And boundaries, yeah.
Learn to use that responsibility and be held accountable for using it appropriately or inappropriately. But coercion doesn't work. And the state of Oregon has got this sledgehammer, and they're willing. It's worse than the nun with a ruler whacking on your fingers as you're trying to do your math right. It's a sledgehammer that will break your back if you don't follow their rules.
I think we've got a long ways to go here in Oregon. And I've said it about America, is that America's not going to turn around until it has a spiritual revival. I think the same can be said here for Oregon. But we'll put that aside for now. We did have an event here. Trump was nearly shot, had a great RNC convention. And in the wake of all of that, suddenly Joe Biden decided to step down after we were all told that everything was just fine with him mentally, as little as just a couple weeks ago. And now all of a sudden he's stepped out and everybody knows exactly why. It's because he was not okay mentally, and they can no longer hide that. So we've got this situation now where Kamala has essentially been anointed. All of the delegates that had been cast for Joe Biden have now been transferred to her. So it's really more selection rather than election. And yet they call Trump a threat to democracy. What do you make of all of that?
Well, it's paradoxical or idiotic, whichever way you want to look at it, because it can well be true, although absurd. But Kamala hasn't made it through any electoral process whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So if you think of our Democratic Republic as a form where everybody gets the opportunity to say yay or no with regard to somebody's name on the ballot, like Trump did. Trump won all the primaries, mostly because in the beginning there were 10 or 12 guys on the ballot, and slowly they decided, well, I'm wasting my time. Trump's got such enormous political clout and a formidable bandwidth of support, I'm going to bow out. So Trump won all of those primaries. Biden was essentially doing the same thing. So you have this moral perspective drawn in the sand. Do you believe in freedom? Do you believe in less government? Or do you believe in more government, greater government, stronger government? And we have those two universes competing with each other, which is actually what has been the everlasting battle of man. How do you give individuals liberty, and how do you avoid them letting them do whatever they want? Because every man's wish is himself to be king. Well, at the end of the day, we realize that doesn't work. And so you have to learn to cooperate, you have to learn to negotiate, you have to learn to be a statesman or a diplomat to regulate the culture. And, you know, as we're going on here, I was reading a book, The Machiavellians, by James Burnham. I think it's written in 1943. And he says, the only way to check a tyrannical government is to give men freedom. And freedom of speech is the most important. And this yes. comes right to bear on the Secretary of State and her MDM, you know, fiasco that's currently ongoing. And I would stop immediately. Is only through wholly free speech and thought and conscious effort can any, you know, buddy come to an accord or an agreement on something, or and come to any form of harmony. Without having that free discussion, you'll never get to harmony. And so it turns out to just be tyrannical to do what the Secretary of State's office is doing, and people yes. should be concerned.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to clarify for people, MDM refers to the artificial intelligence system that the Secretary of State has put into place to look and scan social media and other websites for whatever the Democrats in charge claim is mis, dis, or malinformation about the elections. And, yeah, you know, let's go ahead and break a little bit early here. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Dennis Lithcomb coming up. We're going to be talking about getting to secure elections. Stay with us. There's an old saying, to say something is foolproof underestimates the ingenuity of fools. And I think of that whenever you hear Democrats talking about secure elections. Just because you think they're secure doesn't mean somebody else hasn't already figured out a way to cheat. And to say they are secure really implies that you've actually stopped looking because you assume they're secure. We are talking today with Dennis Lithcomb, who is running for Secretary of State as the Republican candidate. And when it comes to secure elections, it really starts with the Secretary of State. If you'd like to find out more about him and his policy issues, you can head to his campaign website, electdennis.com, electdennis.com, and we'll link that up on today's show page on iSpyRadio.com, which is 14-30. And so, Dennis, just one last thought from last segment there. This notion that Kamala has now been appointed rather than elected. You had mentioned that she has never gotten any delegates, and that's true. Even back when she was running for president, she never once got a single delegate because she bowed out since she was so unpopular. And even now in the primaries earlier this spring, she doesn't have a direct delegate. It was really for Biden, not for her. She just happened to be on that ticket. But there was always this notion that as they're running, the Democrats are, they kept saying that Trump winning would be a threat to democracy. Well, if Trump wins, that is democracy. So I just find that laughable, really, that the Democrats continue to say that Trump is the threat to democracy, and yet they now have anointed somebody who has never once received a single vote.
Right, right. Well, and see, this is par for the course. The Democrat Party, in my short history, the Democrat Party seems far more keen on amassing power. And because money and political power, you know, isn't necessarily going straight into the pockets of the political class, although it makes its way there after several steps. Where it really goes is it goes into the contracts, mm-hmm. it goes into the land deals, it goes into zoning changes and administrative changes that come out of the regulatory state. So the power, when government has control of everything, what you want is to have key players in key places. And the way you do that is through the electoral process, and rigging the election is therefore the easiest way to victory.
Well, I think that's correct as far as rigging the elections. You know, whenever I think about the notion of secure elections, I think about two things. One is what Stalin said, it's not the people who vote that count, it's the people who count the votes. And the other is the Secretary of State project by George Soros, who spent oodles of money to push far-left secretaries of state into office, positions that oversee the elections. So the Democrats in Oregon want people to think that we have 100% totally secure elections, and that there's no means to cheat on a large enough scale that it could change the outcomes. Is that correct?
See, this is the this is the theory behind the whole game. For example, I've made this claim several times. We don't know whether there's fraud or not because we cannot get our hands on the data. Your listeners may remember I was part of a lawsuit, a Freedom of Information request. We asked for all the ballot images from Jackson County. That was probably less than 180,000 ballots, the population somewhere in the 220,000 range. Jackson County is in my Senate District 28. And the elections officer, the county clerk in Jackson County said, sure, we'll be happy to give you a thumb drive with all of that data. The price tag is $982,867.17. So they essentially told us, I'll give you the information if you give me $1 million. And of course, this is why nobody knows whether there's fraud or not, because you can't get your hands on the data. And then what that does is that causes people to ask questions, to raise suspicion, to have conspiracy theories and rumors of election fraud or whatever. The Oregonian wouldn't endorse me because they said I don't believe, I'm an election denier is what they called me. And I didn't deny anything. I said, we just wanted to see the data. And it's like,
if anything, you're not an election denier, you're an election prover. You'd like to prove that the elections are fair and safe.
That's right. The guy sitting across from you at the gambling table, you know, in the room with all the people watching and everybody with their bets and whatever, he says, I've got four aces. And he puts his hand down on the velvet table. And you throw your hand out and you show that you've got, you know, a 3 and a 7 and an 8 and a 9, you know, and your hand doesn't add up to anything. He said, I've got four aces. And he never showed us his card.
Right.
Do we believe him?
Sure.
And what everybody does is they say, show me the cards. They go, no, the pot's mine. He gave up. Remember, he said, what did they say at the card table? I fold. He said, I fold. And he threw his hands down. That means I win. I had four aces. Simply saying, prove it. Let me see those aces.
Sure. Yeah. And I think that's completely reasonable. And the fact that they won't do that is just going to lend itself to suspicion. So if someone wanted to cheat and steal an election, how would they do that in Oregon? I mean, have you thought about the vulnerabilities within our current voting system and how can they be fixed?
Well, the vulnerabilities are innumerable. You can't even add them all up because everything at the technical level, it has to do with a chain of command. So your ballot gets sent to you by mail, and we already, quite frankly, have lost chain of command because I don't know that when a ballot goes to your address, I don't know as Secretary of State that you opened it. Right. And I don't know that you filled it out. And I see your signature is close. You know, how close is close? There is no metric to define how close is. And so it may have been you who signed the envelope, which is on the outside. You didn't sign the interior where all the ballot circles exist. And so there's this giant disconnect, and then it shows back up in my office, and I go to count it. And we don't know that the machine has its criteria set real fine, and it throws yours out because you're a sloppy circle filler, and the circle fill is a little off of center. And then, you know, it doesn't get counted. So it goes to evaluation, and we have a Republican and a Democrat both looking at it. And they could be in an argument about that's a circle for Biden or a circle for Trump. And then somebody else comes to be a third party adjudicator to fix that. And everything becomes up to this interpretive model. And worse, if your ballot shows up by mail after 7 days, there's a giant may clause whether the Secretary of State has
what you're raising here about that may clause is really important, but I know it's going to take a bit to answer that. So let's go ahead and take a break here. Everyone stay with us. We'll wrap up with Dennis Lithcomb after this. Again, his campaign website, if you would like to go visit that to find out his stance on these things, is electdennis.com. electdennis.com. And we're back in our final segment. Now we're talking with Dennis Lithcomb. He's the Republican candidate for Oregon's Secretary of State. And Dennis, going out of that last break there, you just started to raise a really important point, which is this may clause when it comes to whether or not a Secretary of State or an elections official may or may not count a postmarked ballot. So back up and talk to us about that.
Yeah, so there was a House Bill 3291, which basically was a rigged engineering of what late ballots can get counted or not counted. And they rigged it and gave all of the discretionary authority to the county elections official, i.e. the county clerk. Now, that doesn't sound like a big deal, but the county clerk in Multnomah County carries far more voting power or weight than the county clerk in Gilliam County, because those two respective counties, both on the Columbia River, have enormous population variances. So the clerk in a Republican county may have far fewer votes, discretionary votes to determine. And Multnomah County has a ton of discretionary power to determine to vote, to count a vote or not. And the here's, let your readers contemplate on this phrase that comes from the public service announcement out of the Secretary of State's office. It says, "The new law will mean that the total number of votes cast in the election will increase in the days following election day." Okay, that's obvious. "These are not late votes, period. Every vote tallied by the election officials will have been cast on time," close quote. Now, they went from the votes being cast on time being the postmark to every vote that got counted, was cast on time.
It identifies as being on time.
It identifies it, yeah. So that's self-identification, maybe like the trans, this is a trans.
It's a trans ballot.
Yeah, okay, it's a trans ballot. Now here's what the actual law says, Section 8 of House Bill 3291. "If the elector returns a ballot by mail and a postal mark is not present, or eligible. In other words,
you can't read it.
You and I have long heard that ballots have to be postmarked by election day. It turns out that's not true. If it's not present or legible, then it's considered to be mailed on the day of election. And here's the very next phrase in that sentence that is the killer phrase, "and may be counted if the ballot is received no later than 7 days after the election." And that may clause says, I, as a county clerk, get to count this one or that one. There's no requirement that I count them all. There's only a statement that I can choose to count this one. We looked him up, the girl on my right looked him up, and he's a Democrat, I'll count him. And the county clerk over on my left counted the other guy, and he's a Republican. I'll choose not to count him, and there's no violation of law. That is completely valid. That's completely legal. I'm not claiming that anyone is doing it. What I'm claiming is it can be done, and it can be done legally. This is an affront to our sense of reason and logic.
Oh, absolutely. So you had mentioned in that last segment about the chain of custody there, where the Secretary of State sends you the ballot. They don't know that you actually get it. They don't know that you actually open it. And even if you sign it, they don't know that that's really your signature or not. And then you compare that to what used to be on election day, is that there's a clear chain of custody. They see you show up in person, you have an ID, you sign in, they hand you the ballot, you go fill it out, and you come back and you turn it in. The other, I think, real potential area for fraud is the chain of custody of the ballot themselves once they've been opened. Because once they've been opened, there's nothing to connect a ballot with that envelope. They're just thrown into a big giant bin and counted. So it seems to me that there's an open door there for if somebody wanted to cheat, they could by substituting a whole bunch of ballots that they have pre-filled out. Is that a vulnerability here in Oregon, or do we have some means to safeguard against that?
Well, yeah, that's a vulnerability, and we don't have any means to safeguard against that. But that requires a whole lot of dishonest employees in the elections office, and I don't think that's the case. Where I think we have the case.
Well, except there was a lot of suspicious ballots that suddenly arrived in the middle of the night in places like Detroit and Georgia.
Well, yeah. That's where the watchful eye, the ballot watchers on election day, those people need to be there and need to be paying attention and need to have access. Remember, cardboard went up on the windows. A toilet yes. flusher, got jammed and they flooded the bathroom and they evacuated the building like everyone was going to drown. Noah's flood was coming. And none of these are true statements. These were all mitigated disasters perpetrated so that they could hide the elections until 2:30 at night when whammo, all of a sudden everything got going again.
Yeah, well, nothing says transparency like putting cardboard sheets up on windows to block anybody from seeing things. Dennis, unfortunately, we're up against the clock. I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Well, good. I didn't know it was going to go this fast. People can write me a note, dennis@electdennis.com. They can also donate by visiting electdennis.com.
We need people of good character in office, whether that's somebody like Dennis Lithicum, whom I've gotten to know quite a bit over the years, and I fully endorse him for Secretary of State, or somebody like Trump, who believes so much in this country that he took a bullet for it. And we need fighters, because the other side has been more than willing to fight and do whatever it takes to win. Know the person. You're not electing a party, you're electing a person. So make sure they're the right one. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.